Hi, this is Mimi Sheraton, author of 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, and you are listening to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Everybody, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Carrie Diamond, editorial director of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food. I'm so happy to have these two guests in the studio. I want to just start cracking up. I'm not sure why, but I'm very happy you're here. This season of Radio Cherry Bomb is presented by Le Cordon Bleu. I should probably have you two say that.
Le Cordon Bleu.
Much better than me. I always say Le Cordon Bleu because I don't want to lay it on too thick, but Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school, has locations around the globe, from Paris to London to Ottawa. The schools have a wide array of programs available, from nine-month classical culinary training programs all the way to bachelor and master's degrees. Visit cordonbleu.edu for more. And special thanks to our sponsor, Castor and Pollux, maker of the brand new purposeful pet food line, Pristine. A lot of Bomb Squad members are proud pet parents, so you'll want to know all about this grain-free line made with responsibly sourced ingredients. Visit purposefulpetfood.com for more. And we're giving away a year's worth of Pristine dog food. So if you hashtag Cherry Bomb Pets on your pup, you could be entered to win. Hey, Dave, did I tell you I almost adopted two puppies last week?
No. How'd that happen?
Well, I was standing in front of my coffee shop, which is across from Cherry Bomb headquarters. And this woman, I was outside with somebody, I forget who I was talking to, but this woman comes toward us and she's got these two puppies in her arms. And they are the most beautiful puppies I've ever seen in my life. And I started talking to her and she was fostering the puppies for Social Tees. That's T-E-E-S, which is this animal adoption organization. They are pretty popular on Instagram, so you should check them out. But anyway, she was fostering them for Social Tees, and you've never seen more beautiful puppies. If you go, I think it's on my Instagram and Cherry Bomb's Instagram, but go look at them. They were rescued from Tennessee, and one of them had the most beautiful blue eyes. You have never seen blue eyes on a dog like this. I know. I wanted to start weeping, and I really, really, really wanted those dogs. And if I wasn't about to embark on the Cherry Bomb cookbook tour, I would be the owner of two puppies right now.
A likely excuse.
Well, I actually had to, this is going to make me sound like the cat lady of the century, but I had to have a call with my cat sitter last night because I'm going to be on the road for a long time. I'm cracking the guests up here. I'm going to be on the road for a long time, and my cat, for all, those of you who listen or know my cat, Dusty, she's like a puppy, and she loves attention, she loves people, and the thought of leaving her alone all day with just, like, her sitter coming by for... Okay, we get it. Dave, we get it. So anyway, I don't know. Maybe my brother will take my cat in, or my sister, if you two are listening.
What's Allie doing? I think Allie's a responsible pet parent, right?
Allie is. Son, I guess, can take care of her.
Oh, okay. Cats. Okay, we have a volunteer. Allie actually has watched Dusty before, so I might enlist Allie and Donna. And Dusty has a lot of cat aunts. Okay, I'm going to stop because I really am sounding like super cat lady right now. But anyway, hashtag your pets, Cherry Bomb Pets. If you have a puppy, you could be or a dog, you could be entered to win the giveaway for the Pristine purposeful pet food. And if you don't have a dog, we'd still love to see what kind of pet you have. All right, on to our guests who've been sitting here patiently. Today, we are talking with two of our French Bomb Squad babes, Agathe Lerolle and Chloe Vichot. Agathe created She Is French, a granola brand that combines her French heritage and her American lifestyle. And Chloe is the founder of Ancoli, the Epicurean canteen in Greenwich Village that is notable for many things, including the fact that everything comes in glass packaging. Agathe, Chloe, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you, Carrie. It's really wonderful to be here.
So let's say who's who, so they know which beautiful accent belongs to whom.
Agathe.
I'm Chloe. Thanks, Carrie.
This has been a long time coming.
I know. It was in September, no?
It was when
early.
We met?
Oh, no, it was Jubilee, or before Jubilee.
Were you there?
We met at Uncle Lee.
We did, that's right. So I had read about Uncle Lee in, I don't know, you got a lot of press when it opened, so maybe Grub Street or something, and I'm like, I got to check this place out. So even though it was not in my backyard, I hopped on the train to go in there, and you were there.
It's funny, because it was right when we opened, and I saw you, I was sitting down, I saw you walking in, so I'm looking up, and I'm like, I know this woman, I know this woman. It took me a while, and then I asked you, I was like, oh, of course, I came at the Jubilee, and I'm a super fan of Cherry Bomb, so I was very excited that you came to visit us.
And it was my lucky day, because not only were you there, but you were there.
Yeah, and I saw you also, because I collect the magazines.
Aw.
You know.
Thank you for that. Yeah. Well, now I'm super fans of yours. So you both took part in our very first marketplace. Mm-hmm. And I saw you at the Goop conference.
Absolutely.
Out in Los Angeles, and that was fascinating. And we're just super big fans, and we love what both of you do, and I thought it would be really fun to have you on the show. And I'll say one more thing, and then I'll actually let the guests start talking. But when I was in Europe earlier this year, I was in London for a while, and I was really, really impressed by just how tight all the women in food in London are. They're, even if they're not friends, they're just super supportive of each other, but a lot of them are friends, and they're all kind of getting to know each other, and sort of what happened in America is happening over there. You know, women are really realizing that they need to come together as a community and just really support each other. And then I went to Paris after that. And, you know, Paris is my favorite city. I just love, love, love Paris so much. And if I could speak French, I would probably live there. But
I don't need to speak French.
You kind of
do. You'll go there
and
learn French.
I know. But you know I worked for Lancôme and was there all the time. I kind of think you do need to know French to fit in. Yeah. But you could still go there and not speak a word of French and have a fabulous time. And I have. But I was really curious about the women in food scene there. I did not get the same vibe that food is having this feminist moment over there and women on the food scene are coming together. And I know you don't live in Paris.
Yeah. And I want to say there are not that many French women in food right now in Paris or in France.
I'm more close to the American scene than the French scene, but I'm going in November and I'll let you know after. But it's true that in general, there's a more of a cooperation and friendship in the Anglo-Saxon way of life than in the French one.
It made me curious, like, what is feminism in France versus, I know, I'm like, you're like, can't you ask us the easy questions that the other guests get? Like, where was I born? Where were each of you born?
I was born in Paris, and I moved to New York 12 years ago.
Okay.
I was born in Casablanca, and I was raised in Malaysia, and I moved to Paris when I was 9.
Wow.
And I came a long time ago also.
So I was just curious if the idea of feminism in France is different from what it is here.
I think in France, putting a label on something and having a clan about something is badly seen. When you walk in the street and you see someone you know, you don't say hello in case they don't recognize you. Like, it's this kind of like rude Parisian way of being. I've never heard of being part of feminist group in France because it's not something you do. I feel that here in New York, people help each other out. French people help each other out because we're all from abroad and we're happy to help each other out. Women help each other out because, you know, we've been struggling or we're trying, or business owners help each other. So I think that the vibe is totally different. I agree with you. I have the feeling that in France it's a bit different, maybe because people don't do it, or it's not seen as well or as in such a positive way as it can be done here.
Yeah, and I think also maybe asking for help is not as cool as here. You know, everybody's much more, you know, friendly and say, hey, you know, I need help on this. But feminism, there was just an article in the French Elle that I was reading where an actress said, I'm not a feminist. And there was a huge wave of voices. But I think that's what Chloe said. People don't want to be labeled as much, or I don't know.
I mean, it's interesting because both of us come from a men world. We used to work in finance, the two of us. I never felt as a woman that it was a challenge. To the opposite, I always felt that being a woman in a men's world was great, especially because I was a salesperson. And my clients were very happy to talk to someone that had a French accent, that was a nice girl, rather than like another guy that's going to talk about basketball and beer and whatever. So I always felt that it was something positive, and I think that's how we grew up and how we learned on coping for those kind of things. Maybe that's, and that's another thing. I hear a lot of girl here that would find it challenging or you know, will not like the interaction that they have with the guys, but it's just when you just get used to it and you're like, okay, and I guess being a woman in a kitchen or in a restaurant industry is the same thing, and you just, you get a tougher skin and you go with it, and you just, as Agathe said, you don't ask for help and you go for it.
Mm-hmm. No, I ask for help. I ask for help all the time.
No, but in France, that's how we used to do it. Yeah.
I mean, I have kind of a skewed version because my French experience was not like a real French experience, and I was lucky to work with all these incredibly strong French female executives who ran, you know, all those beautiful brands, those beauty brands over there. But it is changing on the food scene a little bit. You know, you've got Camille, who has that little place called Bouvette.
Oh, yes.
And it's a tiny little wine bar, but she's doing really great food, a lot of natural wines, and a lot of cool chefs stop by and do pop-ups there. The two sisters who are doing Le Servant, if I'm saying that right, Le Servant.
Servant.
And we'll put a little list together, some places that
I'm going
that
in November, so I need the list before, so
we'll
we can go in all the
we'll
places.
We'll take your recommendation for next time we go to Paris. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, where do we even start with you two? So let's talk granola for a few minutes.
Okay.
Granola is it doesn't seem like a French thing, so I kind of want to know, what was your granola awakening?
I think I must have been a bird in a previous life, you know. I love grains and I love granola, and I'm not a great chef, so I think it's one of the things I can cook and not screw up too much. So that's how I started. And I love breakfast. I've always loved breakfast. I could, you know, that's, and then I, you know, I get on with my day and I forget sometimes to eat. But and I started with the first recipe because I was looking for a recipe that wouldn't be too sweet. You know, because our level of sugar is a bit lower than in the U.S.
Thank you for doing that, by the way. So many granolas are just way too sweet.
For me, they were way too sweet and there was too much sugar. So, and I wanted to add the superfood because, you know, I was obsessed with maca. So it was my first granola was based with maca. Maca is a super root from Peru for energy level. But it's also an aphrodisiac. And so
the truth comes out, people.
Exactly. And so I mixed it up, and it had a really nutty taste. It didn't have such a sweet taste, and it was very peculiar. And so, you know, I started baking it, giving it to friends, and friends wanted more. So I thought, well, maybe I should do, you know, another recipe and a third recipe. And I came with the one with turmeric and the other one with matcha. So these are the three, and they, you know, they all have a name, and I started She Is French.
Tell us the names.
So the maca one is Alba, for a friend of mine who has three kids and raised three kids as a single mom, and she was always my go-to strong woman. The turmeric one is Karine, who's also a friend of mine who has four kids and run marathons, and it's anti-inflammatory, you know, turmeric, so I named it after her because she was eating it all coming out of the oven. And the third one is Lauren, whom I don't know. It's for an actress that I love and that I named after her.
It's so funny. I just assumed the Corrine was Corrine Reutfeldt.
Oh,
but I guess you can...
I should, but it would be with a C. It's mine is with a K. I know.
Okay. I don't know how to spell in French, I guess. The name of your company is... It just... I love it, and it cracks me up at the same time. How did you come up with that, and how did... I'm sure some people tried to talk you out of it, because it's not the first name you would think of for a granola company.
I had the name before, because I had a blog. Basically, I was here, and... you know, I'm French, but I'm here since 18 years, so I'm American. I have both citizenship. I have kids who are American. I always work in American companies, so it was really bizarre. So I feel really both very strongly. And so She Is French, it's in English. It says she's French, but it's in English, so well, I don't know. It was obvious.
And where can people find She Is French?
We are at online, of course, sheisfrench.com, and we're in about 10 places in New York, Le District downtown. We're at Bilboquet, Café Bilboquet that opened. We're at Bel Ami. We're in Dover Street Market. We are...
Do you have national distribution yet?
We're in Houston, at Sur la Table, but not yet, no.
Are you working? Is that a goal?
that would be a major goal, yeah, for this year.
So if you're out there listening and you have the kind of shop that would be appropriate to sell She Is French, just email.
We'd love that.
What do you have, like info at She Is French? What's
info the... at sheisfrench.com or Agathe at sheisfrench.com or hello at sheisfrench.com.
And Agathe, you have a really sexy Instagram account.
Yes. Well, because I know it's
very.
It's okay. Sexy's okay. It's okay.
Yeah. It's my alter ego. You know, it's what I think in the morning. Because sometimes in the morning, I don't want to see my picture. But so I take a picture of, you know, something I'm inspiring and I keep that picture for the day. And I think, you know, I'm that girl with a mini short going, you know, to the beach instead of, you know, putting my flats and going to the subway. So it's my alter ego.
And you said you love breakfast. Walk us through your breakfast
morning routine. Mm-hmm. So we have breakfast, all four of us, in the morning.
You do?
Everybody.
Your teenagers?
With my teenagers.
Impressed.
Nobody talks. And I have tea. And basically, it was also why I started doing granola, because, you know, the boys will have their cereals, and it's, you know, Fruit Loops or that kind of stuff. Lorenzo will have eggs, and I just wanted something more girly and more feminine and just for me. And so that's how I started. And I have tea. And
what kind of tea?
I have Earl Grey, Lady Grey exactly. I know it's not a very fancy one, but I love it.
And what do you do with your granola? Like, I love a parfait. Like, I'll do yogurt and fruit and granola and sprinkle some bee pollen on it. And
yes.
I love to, I don't know.
That's exactly me.
Make a
so
cute
I have,
bowl.
I take my, I have little bonne maman, you know, jars that the boys use for the jam. And then I keep them and I put seeds in every one and I'll put all these things. And in the morning, I take my granola, I'll put some kefir because I'm obsessed with kefir right now. And then I'll pick in my jars and I just like make my little cocktail in the morning. And that's how I start the day.
So funny. I went through a kefir phase.
Oh, you went?
Where I was like obsessed.
Obsessed.
Obsessed. But it had to be the unflavored.
Me too. And it's no Organics sugar. Valley. Mm-hmm. That's my brand.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I'll check that one out. No, that's okay. That's people like to know what everybody's into. And do you do anything else special with your granola? Do you make any, like, I don't know, cakes with it?
Yes,
or?
We're actually here.
Oh, what do you have in there?
We did a little wake-up guide.
Oh, nice.
Like a French girl. And there's about 6 or 7 recipes in there. And we did cake. We did marshmallows. We did... so you can go online, and if you sign up for the newsletter, you receive the guide with all these recipes.
The sexy guide.
The sexy guide for your morning.
When does Chloe get her own granola?
That's a good question. We're debating. The next one will be with chocolate, so maybe,
ooh.
Right?
Sure.
Chocolate and hemp. That's what I'm aiming for.
Chocolate and hemp?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, why those two ingredients?
I don't know. I'm going to make some, because munchies.
Munchies. Okay, got it. Well, I love chocolate. You could name it the Carrie, but that's not very French.
Lauren is not French, and Alba is not French. So
okay, good point.
So they're all,
you don't have,
you know,
to name it
you don't
for me.
Have to be French to be eating She Is French. That's the whole point.
That is true. That is absolutely true. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back to talk more with our French friends.
Le Cordon Bleu. The renowned culinary school was founded in Paris 122 years ago by a young journalist named Mademoiselle d'Estelle. In 1895, she launched the first weekly culinary magazine called La Cuisinière Le Cordon Bleu. She invited subscribers to take part in free cooking lessons with the chefs featured in her magazine. And from there, the school was born. In the years since, Le Cordon Bleu's world-class instructors have taught French classical culinary techniques to everyone from home enthusiasts to food world legends. If you've dreamt of attending culinary school, maybe it's time to quit that boring corporate job and check out one of Le Cordon Bleu's 35 locations around the world. Or add a short workshop or weekend program at one of its schools to your next vacation. Visit cordonbleu.edu for course descriptions, dates, and online registration. It's all possible at Le Cordon Bleu.
Hey there, Bomb Squad. This is Donna Yen from Team Cherry Bomb. My dog Teddy is a regular at Cherry Bomb HQ, and I care about where his food comes from just as I do my own. That's why Teddy and I are excited about Pristine, the only complete line of pet food made with responsibly sourced ingredients. Castor and Pollock's new line of pet food is made with ingredients like grass-fed beef and wild-caught salmon. I love that they care about Teddy as much as I do, and as for Teddy, he gives it two paws up.
Hey everybody, you're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb, and we're in the studio today with Agathe Lerolle of She Is French and Chloe Vichot of Ancolie, the Epicurean Canteen in Greenwich Village. All right, so Chloe, it's your turn to talk a little bit. How did you get into the food world?
So I always dreamt of having a restaurant when I finished high school. That was really what I had in mind, but I guess that's not something you did at that time in Paris. Which sounds surprising because everybody would think that in France we dream about opening a restaurant and it's easy, but it was not necessarily the case. And my dad is a business owner and he always pushed me to work in a big corporation and have a steady income. So that's kind of what I did. I went to business school, I studied finance, and I moved to New York and I worked in a couple of different banks here in the city. And I think that when I finally got my green card, I was ready to move on and start following my passion and do something that I was really dreaming about for a long time. And I feel that, you know, having had this corporate job and sitting at a desk and eating salads and food that were available, I couldn't really find anything that I really liked. So I wanted to do something very simple, healthy, using local ingredients, and not adding a ton of either honey in the dressing or cream or yogurt or, you know, really simple flavors. So that's where I started thinking about getting there. And then 2 years ago, when I was traveling in Europe, I saw a couple of concepts using glass jars. And I thought that would be an amazing way to feature those salads and those meals to go and avoid all the unnecessary trash that we have in the to-go food here in New York.
So the goal first was the good food, and
yes.
Then the environmental part came second.
Absolutely. Okay. The goal was always to nourish people and have them come and have a little break in our canteen. So either sit down and enjoy or take it to go. And even though we do salad, we also do chocolate cakes. We do a lot of treats. And that's very important for me. I hate salad. So I think what was very important for me was to make sure that they were nourishing. So they either have lentils or grain or...
French lentils.
That was the first thing I had at Ancolie.
Yeah, that's my favorite. To make sure that it's filling enough that you don't feel that you have... Because most of the time I would have a salad, then I would end up going at the vending machine eating crabs two hours later.
That's so not French.
And the goûter is very French, yes.
And we have
snack
to talk
about...
Is it? Yeah. We do have to talk about the eating at your desks during work, because my French colleagues, that would make them nuts. When they would come here for meetings,
I hated it. So my first two jobs were in French banks, so it was okay. Like, people would do it, so you could do it, even though I was on a trading floor, and when the market was open, you were not really supposed to have a break, but if you had a client meeting, you could go, and every once in a while, you could excuse yourself. But then I worked at Bank of America, and the first 2 years, I had to say I had doctor's appointment. So
from eating at your desk?
No, to go and have lunch with someone.
Oh, because no one ever left their desk.
Never.
Wow.
So I would come back, and everybody was like, "Is everything okay?" And I'm like, "Yes. Oh, yes, I had a doctor. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm totally fine. Sorry."
Because the French go out for lunch.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Even like I would go out for lunch with my old boss, or I would go with some of my clients or some relationship. But it's important, because you need to decompress and kind of forget about what's happening. Two, you never know, you're going to have a good idea, you're going to talk to someone, and then you're going to come back and you're going to be more focused. And if you had a crappy morning, then this person can help you to maybe unwind a little the situation instead of being like super aggravated and then doing nothing. So I think that, you know, the whole idea of not a sad desk lunch and eating well and taking time, even if you go in a conference room and you eat with your colleague, I think that's very important.
A friend of mine, Amy Keller Laird, is the editor-in-chief of Women's Health magazine. You guys should both know her. Maybe we can hook you up with her. But anyway, Amy did a whole program trying to get people to leave their desks at lunchtime and just go outside, walk around the block, do something. But just that culture of you're working 8 hours, you're at a desk, and you just never get up, not even to eat, is terrible.
It's horrible. I mean, some people will just get lunch delivered, eat in front of their desk, and leave. Some would
do it sometimes.
So me too. Sometimes I do it, but and some would go to a place to have lunch that's a little bit further, so they have this 15-minute walk, which is the same thing. Then, by the way, taking half an hour because round trip is the same, but they cannot convince themselves that they can sit for half an hour, so they're just going to pretend that they had this very long walk, or they love waiting online at places. So you know, they kill a little bit of time, but everybody needs to unwind, and I think it's very healthy, and I wish this could change.
So we need to talk a little bit about how crazy you are, in a good way, because I think you are the only person doing product in all glass.
Yes.
Can you tell? Let's talk about that and the environmental aspect
sure,
of what
absolutely.
You do.
Sure, absolutely. So, as I was saying earlier, since this idea of using glass jar came to me, I end up designing my own jars because I couldn't find jars that were the shape that I needed them to be. Regular mason jars are too narrow, that people that take their lunch to work in a mason jar, they need to put it in a plate because you cannot eat out of it. So I designed mine to be big enough to eat out of directly. So there's the visual aspect, the playful aspect, because you have to shake your salad to eat out of it, and then it's glass. And since I had this glass, I started to think a little bit more on, you know, since now this is part of my value and the DNA of my brand, how do I make my restaurant more sustainable? So we started working with the Green Restaurant Association that gave us a 4-star rating, which is the highest rating, and there's only 3 restaurants in New York that have it. And they take into account everything. The floor that we used is recycled, the lights that we're using, it's only LED, the water that we're using. So they control everything. And a lot of little things that we added to the restaurant were thanks to the suggestion that they made. For example, if you take a coffee to go, we have a big dispenser of sugar instead of having small packets. We have spoons that people can reuse, and then we wash them and we keep on using them. If you eat in the store, you have real forks and real coffee cups. If you take it to go, you keep the jar. And a lot of our customers reuse them at home, are very excited. Some of them collect them, either put their pens on it, like Agathe, use them to drink, or, you know, many different things. Or you can bring it back to the store, and then you get a dollar credit. So that's really how it started, and people love to be part of the clan, and they open their backpack and they have a lot of jars and they get excited and they're like, oh, I got 5 jars today, or so that's really nice, and it's kind of an embedded membership program, which is really cool. And we pushed it a little bit further this summer. All of our ice beverage were served in the glass jar, even to go. And people were a bit shocked at the beginning, saying, no, but it's to go. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you can keep the jar. It's yours. And all of a sudden, their face would light up and they would be like, oh, really? I can keep it. And they were super excited. We give them a paper straw so we don't have any plastic in the store. And if they stay in the store, we give them bamboo straw that we also wash and reuse.
Wow. I mean, it really is remarkable because no one else is doing that.
I know. But I think that a lot of it is, for me, it was easy because I did it from the beginning. So I didn't have bad habits of working in a restaurant and doing it a different way because I didn't. Same thing, we compost all of our food scrap. We try to be very careful on our food waste by ordering in small quantities, using all of the ingredients. For example, we have some apples that we use for our applesauce, and then we roast the skin. We bake it in the oven. We make a crisp with it. But again, because we started like this and we started thinking, you know, every step of the way, okay, what can we do? How can we avoid that? At the end of the day, I'm sure we're saving a lot of money compared to other restaurants, because when I look at all the trash that we see outside of the restaurant, not only it's disgusting, but also it costs money because you pay per weight. And I have my trash out 3 times a week and I only have 1 black plastic bag every time. That's it. Everything else is either compost that goes in a community garden in the East Village, and the rest is recycling. So I think that, one, for our neighbors, we care about them a little bit more, for our environment, of course, and then it saves me money at the end of the day, for sure.
I mean, this is so remarkable. I have to ask, are you making money? Not to be nosy, I know it's hard when you're a little business. And
I mean, not yet. We're still, you know, it hasn't been a year yet, mm-hmm. But we have a lot of clients that come back and that are very excited about the store. We do a lot of catering, which is mm-hmm. also a very profitable side of the business. So it's definitely going in the right direction. I'm already considering, you know, if I want to open another one, where would it be? Talking with partners to maybe sell my salad in gyms or coffee shop that don't have food or other type of stores. So, you know, I think that we will get very profitable soon, I hope. But because that was part of my business plan, using glass from the beginning, and people are willing to pay a little bit more because we only use good quality food. Everything mm-hmm. is sourced locally from New York as much as possible. And that's why they come. People come because the food is good and clean. And then the sustainable and environmental aspect is a plus that they're happy to be part of.
So tell us a little bit more about the food. What's on the menu right now?
So we have 4 salads on the menu. So the one we were talking about, the Ancoli, the one that has the name of the store, has lentils, shallots, goat cheese, walnuts, carrots, and lettuce. And we can add either a chicken or an egg on top. We have a pasta salad with homemade pesto that's doing very well. We have our rainbow salad with red cabbage and a miso dressing. I think you should try it because you would like the Asian influence to it. It's very good. Our chocolate cake is one of our bestsellers. Our chocolate mousse also. All of our desserts, we try to be very cautious about the amount of sugar. As Agathe was saying, we don't like things that are too sweet in France, so and we don't like cinnamon either. That's another thing we don't like.
The French in general, or just you?
In general, I think we do an applesauce that has no cinnamon, and all my French friends are like, "God, it's the first time I can try one without cinnamon in this country."
That's so funny. I did not know that about the French.
Yeah.
You are so far ahead of the curve. I'm so happy you've stuck with it, and I don't give up.
Thank you.
I don't know. You're such a leader in this, and I just hope the industry starts to recognize you for that.
Thank you very much. I have the feeling that people are going to follow just because it's going to become a trend and people are going to want to see glass. But that's important. There's another restaurant to go that started serving food in jars. They're in plastic. They're not in glass. But they got a lot of press, and when people were talking about them, they were talking about us, and it's becoming a trend where people are serving food in jars. And I think this is going in the right direction for me, and people are going to be more used to it, and that can only be better.
Yeah. I mean, I've talked about just really trying to be more mindful, and even just trying to change my shopping habits. You know, when you go out and you're buying your peanut butter, or, you know, the things that you buy all the time and use all the time, you know, what could you get in glass that when you have an option, you know, choose?
Well, I have to say that Chloe designed beautiful jars, so you want to keep them. It's true that, you know, if everybody was making a little effort on design like she did, you would want to keep the jars.
Well, Chloe, the first thing I said to you when we met, I was like, I said, oh, how much is it? I said, I don't think I'm going to be able to come back to return the jar because I was bringing it back to Brooklyn. And it was only $1. And I was like, Chloe, these jars are so nice.
No one's going to bring them much more.
No one's going to bring them back. And you were like, but everybody has small apartments. They're going to get to the point where they have so many jars and they're like, I need to bring my jars back to Ancoli. And I guess your regulars are doing that.
Absolutely.
But I do have my Ancoli collection in my
I'm glad you
cabinet.
Have it.
Sorry.
But I agree with you. It takes, like, I think that growing up in France, I was more sustainable and more cautious about the environment than what is happening here. My parents always told me to switch off the lights when we were not in a room. In France, you would never see a building with lights on 24/7. You will have either a motion detector or you would put it on when you just walk in. When I would brush my teeth, I would stop the water. So those are all little things. The same thing by just eating sustainably and locally, because we would go to our local markets and buy what is available and what is in season. So when I moved here, I realized that I was doing something different. And like anything else, when you do something different here, you feel that you need to push it a little bit further. So like you, since I opened my store, now I always have an extra tote in my bag. So if I go shopping, I put my groceries in it and I never take a plastic bag anymore. now I have a reusable cup. So this morning I had an orange juice and I just asked them to put it in so I didn't have to take any plastic or a straw or anything. And it takes organization and it takes time, but I think that little, by saving, even if it's just a plastic bag every day, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. You started to tell me about a straw campaign that the actor Adrien Grenier, is that how you say his name, is doing. Tell us about that.
He's doing that with Lonely Well. They started in Seattle. The effort is called Stop Sucking and Stop Using Plastic.
Sounds so much better in French.
Yeah, I can say it.
you can say it again for all of our listeners who love your accent.
Stop sucking now. but they did something amazing. They managed to block all the plastic straw from Seattle Airport, from the Space Needle. There's a lot of different establishments that are doing it. They just called Starbucks to stop doing it nationally, which would be amazing. We did it from the very first day. We never had any plastic straw. I think, first of all, I think customers like it. And around the world, we're seeing an effort. I was in Indonesia, in Bali this summer. The first time I went there 3 years ago, plastic was everywhere. On the beach, it was disgusting. They would throw away plastic bottles, plastic bags. This year, for the first time, all the straw were either paper or something was written on it saying, I'm not plastic, or bamboo straws. So I think that people are asking for it.
I remember the first time I went to Bali, I haven't thought about this in years, but they have sort of flags everywhere. And a lot of them are for religious reasons, but then they also have all the flags like in the rice fields to keep the birds away. And all the flags were made out of plastic bags.
Yes.
And I was shocked. It was just like so much plastic. Mm-hmm. So that's really good to hear.
Yes. So I think there's a movement happening. I think that people believe that it needs to start with regulation. That's not the case. Anyone can start a movement today. The good thing is we have actors. We have people that are influential, that are doing things and get people to follow them. And that's very important.
So, you know, I have a coffee shop and we have straws and plastic to-go cups and it kills me and it kills my brother. You know, I talk about my brother a lot. He works with Surf Rider and the New York City chapter and he is very anti-plastics and has changed a lot of my behavior. And you two did a beach cleanup together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he is on me to change things at the coffee shop and I need to do it. Like, I've been talking about it for a long time and I just need to stop talking about it and just do it.
I'll send you some good links.
It's hard. Like, I was talking to the folks at Counterculture. We work with them and they're our coffee provider. And I said, who's the model for this among all the coffee shops? And there's only one coffee shop they could think of and I can't remember the name, but it's in Seattle. I think it's in Seattle. And it's a company that actually makes like camping equipment and reusable, you know, things to take camping and all that. And all the coffee they serve, you know, is in these containers. So I'm going to go check them out. I wish I could remember the name. But, it's frustrating. I'm like, how do we do it? So it's so nice to see someone who's doing it.
I think you need to push initially. I mean, we opened in November, so it hasn't been a year yet. And when the summer was about to start, I was really wondering, like, what am I going to do for all those iced beverage? Because everybody takes plastic. And then I put the jar out and everybody loved it. It was hit or miss. I didn't know. And they just liked it. So I think if you have customers that come to your coffee shop and like what you're doing, maybe they're going to be difficult the first time and then they're going to go with it and be part of the
future.
And
I think the younger generation is much more conscious. I mean, I see my children are much more aware of plastic than because, you know, it's a common subject at school. And I think everybody's doing their share.
Well, I think, honestly, I mean, I know not everybody can go do a beach cleanup, but if you do a neighborhood cleanup or a beach cleanup, you will see everything that's out there. And I just got to bring it up again. Balloons, everybody. They're all over the beach. And when you think it's cute to, like, let a balloon up into the sky, you know it's pretty. We all love that image. But don't do it. If you're an event for 12 seconds, right? If you're an event planner, if you're just a mom or a dad throwing a kid's birthday party.
Rice bags. You know, the paper rice bags that go up, and they go up in flame.
Oh, right. That's a great idea. Absolutely. So you both know the Jubilee Conference because you've taken part in it.
And we love it.
Oh,
love it.
Thanks. It made me so happy to see you both there. We are doing our first one in San Francisco, and it's a little over 2 weeks away from today. We'll record. You'll hear this show a week later. I'm freaking out because we still have a lot of work to do. But we're really trying to make it greener because I was very unhappy with how ungreen our last conference was. And you know, we had an honest conversation about it and just how it was a fail on our part. I'll put that out there. Like, we did not pay attention to the things that we should have paid attention to. And there were certain things I just assumed would take place in terms of the recycling on site that didn't, but that's all on, you know, it's all on me. I didn't ask the right questions. So the nice thing is San Francisco is so much further ahead of the curve that they make you do that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are other things you can do as an organization. So I'm a little behind on sending the emails out to everybody who's coming to Jubilee, but I want to ask everyone, bring a set of silverware. You know, I made my nephews bring spoons to an ice cream shop in Maine this summer. I mean, they were like, Aunt Carrie, like, we can't believe you're making us bring spoons. And I said, just bring a spoon. It's not going to kill you. We're in Maine. But bring utensils.
And a cup or...
Yeah. And maybe ahead of time, there's a French movie that came out from an actress and called Demain, Tomorrow. And it's fantastic. It's on iTunes, I know, on the American website. And it's all about recycling. And it starts with the whole process of first recycling, then reusing, then planting vegetables in cities in Detroit. And it talks about San Francisco. And it's a great 10 minutes on how San Francisco did their whole recycling. So if you have a chance to watch it, because people, you know, when they watch these movies after them, they really, it hits them in a little bit in the face.
Exactly.
I think education is very important. I think what you're saying, Carrie, most of the events and even a lot of restaurants today, they say that they're sustainable and they're going to serve you in compostable bowls or utensils, but they don't have the trash to handle them. So it just goes in a regular trash and the whole thing is wasted. So I think today we're at a stage where the public is asking for it. So the restaurants are responding by making it look like it's sustainable, but in the back end it doesn't work, and that's the problem you had, and you saw it because you saw the magnitude of the event. But the fact that you are realizing and other people are doing it, I do a lot of catering, and at every event we do, I try to tell them, make sure that, you know, you have a recycling bin for the plastic bottles. We'll take all of our jars back. I did my most sustainable event last Friday, and I took back all the utensils and the napkin that are compostable with me, and we sent it to the compost when we left. And the organization that was doing it was Dopper, the reusable plastic bottles, and so they gave it to all of their guests that were drinking wine out of reusable bottles. So that was quite amazing to see an event where there was no waste at all. And I think we're getting there.
Well, we will talk a lot more about this in the days and months ahead. Dave, we haven't asked Dave to talk at all, and Agathe loves Dave's voice. So, Dave, sorry to put you on the spot there, but can you say something interesting? Oh!
Bonjour.
That is so sexy.
That's it.
Thank you.
Okay, I should
do a little meme with a cat, and it says, say something sexy in French, and he says, no.
Meow.
I have to find that. I like that. All right. Well, you two are the best.
Thank you for having us on our show, Carrie.
Yeah, thank you.
We were so excited. We've been an hour outside in the sun, you know, waiting.
We didn't want to be late, so we arrived super early. We had lunch, then we just chilled outside.
That sounds so French.
Yes. We had our hour break.
Exactly.
We had pizza and dessert and the sun. We're perfect.
Oh, well, you know, I'm a huge fan of you both, so I appreciate you taking the time to come over here. And we've got to get you guys in the magazine, and I know we're going to do a lot more with you in the future. So thanks for doing what you both do. You're awesome.
Thank you.
You are the bomb. Okay, so Dave, I have some housekeeping to do. We have a cookbook coming out, 10-10. The Cherry Bomb Cookbook.
Whee!
Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Yes. Labor of love. If you're on Instagram, you've probably seen the cover. We kick off our book tour pretty soon, so make sure you go to cherrybomb.com and check out our tour dates. We are hitting lots of cities. We're going to be in Seattle on 10-11. Then we go to Jubilee, then we go to L.A. If you know anybody in L.A., I might have said this already, but we're doing an event at Barnes & Noble on the 17th of October, and it's such a big space. I'm terrified no one's going to be there. So please just email your relatives, friends, anybody. Tell them to come and say hi to me.
To all the French people in LA, go to Barnes & Noble's on the 17th of October.
I won't beg. Maybe closer to the date I'll beg, but I'm not ready to beg just yet. But check it out. We're hitting Pittsburgh. We're hitting Chicago, Nashville. We're going to all these really fun places, and I would love, love, love to see everyone. Jubilee tickets are sold out, unfortunately, but for those of you who are coming, we can't wait to see you there as well. And that's it. Let's thank our sponsors. Thanks, as always, to our engineer, Dave Tadashore. Dave, your last chance to say something.
No.
And much love to Castor and Pollux for making this season of Radio Cherry Bomb possible. If you are a devoted pet parent like me, be sure to check out Pristine, the only complete line of pet food made with responsibly sourced ingredients. And don't forget to tag your pets on Instagram, hashtag Cherry Bomb Pets. And as always, we'd like to say a big thank you to Le Cordon Bleu. Be sure to visit, did I get that right? Bleu. Be sure to visit cordonbleu.edu for information about this legendary culinary school. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
Hi, I'm Lizzie Lawrence, designer and intern at Cherry Bomb. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or learn more, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? Tara Jensen, artist and baker of Smoke Signals Bakery in Marshall, North Carolina. Through baking, Tara inspires self-acceptance and community empowerment.
Radio Cherry Bomb is powered by Simplecast. Simplecast is a popular hosting and analytics platform that allows podcasters to easily host and publish to apps like Apple Podcasts. If you have a podcast or are looking to create your very first, check it out. Try it for free and save half off your first 3 months at simplecast.com/heritage.